Let's go.
All right, welcome and thank you for joining me for another episode of the Rivulus Irrigation Training Series. I'm your host, Richard Restuccia, and today we're going to be talking about climate farming. And really, when I think about climate farming, I hear other terms, carbon capture, for example, carbon credits. There's a lot that goes along with this definition. And so I'm really excited to talk about this for a couple of reasons. One, I really do think this is going to make a significant difference in all of our lives, how we live, the quality of our lives going forward. I think it'll make a big difference there. I think it's going to make a big difference for growers as well. I think they have an opportunity to add some to their bottom lines and feel good about what they're doing in the process. But at the same time, this is still a new idea, very complex, complicated, but really something I think is the next big thing in agriculture. So I thought it was important to share that with all of you. So I contacted Jonathan Baravir, the director of climate for Rivulus Irrigation. And I said, Jonathan, I've seen your presentations on this. They're exceptional. I want you to share them with the audience today. And he agreed. For those of you who don't know Jonathan, Jonathan has been committed to sustainability and conservation for his entire life. He's got a master's in business from MIT. He is a really bright guy, but the thing I really like about him and is his ability to be able to share and communicate and make things very understandable. So you're all going to get the benefit of that today. Jonathan, thank you for joining us today. Really nice to see you.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard, for the introduction. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Jonathan, this whole climate change, climate carbon credit, carbon farming, is this kind of buzzwords for today, or do you think we're going to see some change in the way people farm?
Yes, so it's a very hot topic, and I work for a micro irrigation company, Rivulis, and so what I like to say is, in those discussions, if you want to learn about micro irrigation or drip irrigation, maybe don't ask a drip irrigation guy because he will always tell you the good things about it. And here today, what I want to discuss is something different, is a carbon credit, what we call the voluntary carbon market. And as a drip irrigation guy, I think I can bring also like a perspective that is a bit more, let's say, objective compared to companies that the core business is to develop carbon credits, and so they will tell you the good thing about it. What I want to have today is also a discussion about what are the challenges. Sometimes it's a good solution for farmers, and it can change the way agriculture will be done in the next few years. But sometimes it's very challenging; it might not be the best solution. So there are some pros and cons, and the idea here is to have a very open conversation about it and to raise question and provide at least a few answers, I hope.
Yeah, so I'm really appreciative that you're going to bring that balanced discussion to this and really talk about the pros and cons. So I just want to remind everybody of a couple things. One, we are recording this, and everybody who attended today will get a copy of the recording. So we already had a question about that, so I want to remind you. And then also, if you have questions or comments, please put them in the Q&A or the chat. I'll be checking those regularly throughout the webinar and pose the questions to Jonathan when appropriate.
So Richard, you take care of the Q&A, right?
That's right.
I have to. Okay, great. So let's start and let's jump in into the content. So I like to, so for the first thing I want to explain is a bit, what is this initiative that we have at Rivulis that we call Rivulis Climate? And here I will talk about a bit the details and the basics of this market that we call the voluntary carbon market, so that we put everyone here on the same page of what we're talking about. After that, I will discuss a bit what is our experience at Rivulis about in this market. And the last thing that will be a bit shorter, it's how we usually start with farmers when we have good projects, and how do we find a good project that could make good candidates here for this carbon farming topic. So the first,
that's all the things we want to know about. So that's great.
Okay, let's go. So where I'd like to start is like maybe two numbers. And for me, those two numbers are two opportunities for agriculture. one number on the left hand side is the percentage of global greenhouse emissions that come from agriculture, what we call AFOLU, agriculture, forestry, and other land use. And so about a quarter, to make it round, of human greenhouse gases emission every year come from agriculture, forestry, and other land use. So this include the equipment, the machinery, but also the rice paddies or the cows and the methane from the cows. And this is a number that is pretty natural or straightforward when we think that agriculture is maybe the primary activity on the planet. So like any human activity, it does generate greenhouse gases, it does generate pollution. And here there's an opportunity to reduce that and to do better with electrification, with changing or reducing the activity on the field. There is like a few ways that we could improve ourselves on this side. The other opportunity is more, let's say, unique in the sense that in agriculture, you have a way to, because agriculture owns the soil, owns about 40% of the earth soils, you have a way to capture carbon from the air into the soil. So more in the soil means less in the air. And so here it is estimated that we could capture about 8 gigatons of CO2 every year. This compares to a global greenhouse emissions of all humans of about 50. So we could capture every year at today's level of emissions, about 15 to 20% of all global greenhouse emission if you were to change the way we farm. So putting cover crops, reducing tillage, incorporating residues, using more organic matter, et cetera, et cetera. What is very unique is to have the two of them together, to have the less emissions, the opportunity to reduce existing pollution, and the opportunity to capture carbon in the soil. Because usually what you have either one or the other. If you are, I don't know, an airline, you can improve and reduce your pollution, but you cannot capture. If you're like a cemetery, the same. And if you do forestry, you cannot improve an existing activity that is necessary to feed the world. You can only capture. So usually what you have is you have either reduction, either removal, carbon emission reduction or carbon removal. And what makes agriculture unique in that sense is that you can have both of it. And so this is why now carbon farming has become over the last 2-3 years, very recently, a very hot topic, because people understand that you have here a unique opportunity to fight climate change. And the way people want to leverage that, or want to take this opportunity, is through the voluntary carbon market. So just in a few words, what is this market? So first, voluntary carbon market is voluntary, right? Today, we're talking about a market that any participant in the market doing on its own will or voluntarily. Okay, it means that you have on one side a carbon emitter. Okay, this can be any big corporate. It can be American Airlines. It can be Procter & Gamble. It can be Coca-Cola, that have a certain carbon footprint. So they have to measure their footprint, how much they pollute in a sense, and this gives them a number. Now those companies, now because of their shareholders, because of their customers, because of the society, they want to claim that they will reduce their footprint. And the way to reduce their footprint is like, I don't know, they can give electric cars to their employees, they can put solar panels on their offices, but if you're an airline, you will hit a certain level that you cannot reduce. So as long as you fly planes today, you will emit carbon emission. And so those companies, if they want to reduce even beyond what they cannot reduce by themselves, what we call residual emission, what can be reduced, and for instance, reach what we call net zero, so to be, for instance, theoretically at zero emission, they will have to offset those residual emissions. And so this is why this market is also sometimes called the carbon offset market, because this is to offset the residual emissions of companies that committed to reach net zero, for instance, or committed at least to reduce their carbon footprint beyond what they can possibly do in their own footprint. And so this brings enough. Yeah, go ahead.
Jonathan, I had an interesting experience with this recently, right? Yeah. And we've talked about this before. I know when I made my plane travel last week, you know, I saw how much carbon was going to be emitted per flight, and I had choices, right, to pay a little bit more and burn or emit less carbon. This is getting very popular, right? I mean, to see that on the website of an airline.
So this is exactly what you could do at an individual level, so at your very small scale individual level. Now companies or big corporates, they want to do at their large scale level. And so what is this market about? To bring like this large scale corporate offsets. And so this brings, then you need someone that will generate a project that will have the opposite impact, right, of your air travel or the footprint of American Airlines. And so this is where the farmer can get in, but it can also be like someone who protect the forest or someone who could cook stuff in Africa to replace like a pit fire cooking. And so here is the opportunity for the farmer. Farmer could change the way he operates and in a sense have the opposite impact of the footprint of American Airlines. So let's say American Airlines have 1 million ton of carbon to offset, they will go to farmers that will have this opposite impact by developing new project, by putting cover crops, by putting solar panels in the fields, like many different activities that they can do to offset those 1 million ton. And what happens is that American Airlines will pay those farmers to implement those projects. And in exchange, the farmers will give the rights of the reduction to American Airlines. Now, if it was just between the farmers and American Airlines, this market could be a bit shady, right? Because like, who will regulate that? Who will decide how you count carbon? How does like American Airlines know that they buy this amount of carbon offsets? How does the farmer can like justify the fact that he reduced? So to make sure that this market is a trusted market, you have registries, carbon registries. So you have international carbon registries. The two biggest are what we have here in the middle. So Verra and Gold Standard. Verra owns about 60% of the carbon offset market in the world. And I'm not talking about agriculture, I'm talking about the carbon credits globally. Gold Standard owns about 20%. And the remaining 20% are for, let's say, more smaller carbon registries. It is interesting for the US that you have two actually that of the well-known carbon registries that are among those 20%. One is called ACR, the American Carbon Registry. And the other is called the Climate Action Reserve. So in the US, you have actually like relatively active carbon registries that are mostly only active in the US, although now they're trying to expand a bit beyond the borders. So that's a bit this. Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
So Jonathan, these are voluntary carbon markets. Nobody's telling these people that they have to buy offsets. So why are they doing it?
So this is like, so first, it's right, because there is also a mandatory carbon market for, like, for instance, in Europe, a factory has a certain quota, and if they go beyond the quota of emission, they will have to buy from another factory that is below the quota, and this is by law. So here, it's voluntary. So those companies, these American Airlines, or this Coca-Cola, or whoever is part of this market, do it on its own will. Now, why, you could say, why would you spend our money just to offset air? And so the first reason is investors. So there is this idea that, companies that have an active ESG strategy, that have an active environmental strategy, are usually performing better on the long term. So investors are seeking those companies and are willing to pay a premium for those companies to invest in those companies. So first thing, company that is listed and wants to increase their share price, they will do that so that they have like a good name on the market, and good name in the market means like better price for the share price. But it can be also like societal pressure, right? The society now, as you said, like some people are very adamant about climate change and about the need for action. So they could put pressure on those companies. And so if those companies don't act, they are like exposing themselves to a lot of criticism and consumer pressure. Some other company that could also say that, yeah, today it's a voluntary market, but we all know that in the future, there will only be more and more regulation and pressure to reduce your environmental footprint. And so those companies, they want, let's say, to be ahead of the game and to prepare themselves to the future. And it's actually also relevant for farmers, right? Farmers sometimes who enter this market also voluntarily, they think a bit ahead of the game and they say, you know what, I'm going to prepare because I know it's going to come. I know it's going to come. I don't know if it's going to come next year, in 5 years, or in 10 years, but I know it's going to come quite soon. And so I will now make the change that will position me tomorrow to be at the head of my market and not behind. So that's also like another reason.
Yeah, it's so refreshing.
Some people want to do good as well, you know. You don't have to be.
Right, as I was saying, it's so refreshing to see that people do want to do good, that this is being demanded by consumers and companies are responding positively. I mean, it's not a dreamer's market, right?
It's not a dreamer's market. It's really now a market that is becoming more and more rational. And where like there are interest in this market, and so they follow interest, and this is why they invest in that. So it's not, maybe you could say like maybe a decade ago, 15 years ago, it was maybe like a more niche market. This is now becoming more mainstream with like more consumer pressure, society pressure, and so these companies, they have interest to enter this this market.
Yeah, great.
Okay. So those, just to finish on the registry, so what do the registry do? It's quite important, actually. They do two things. So the Vera, the gold standard, ACR, or the CAR, they do two things. One is they set up the rules. It's a bit like if you know finance, they will define what is US GAAP, what is IFRS, right? The accounting norms. So here they will give you the accounting norm for a project. And so they will have to define it by type of project, right? Because the accounting won't be the same for a solar farm and for a farm, a real farm, right? A farming farm, if I may say. And so you will have a methodology called a methodology to account for carbon in agriculture. And so this will be the rule that we will have to follow to account for the carbon in an agricultural project. So that's number one. The second thing that they will do, they will set up the process to certify those projects. A bit like they will tell you, you know, you have every year you have to certify your accounts with PwC and Ernst & Young. Here the same. You'll have every few years, you will have to bring a third-party auditor that in a list of certified third-party auditors by those companies, by those registries. And you will have to bring them to your farm and to make sure that that you follow the methodology, that what is in the field matches what you described in the documents, et cetera, et cetera. So they're kind of the guardians of this market, okay? This organization, Vera Gold Standard, are usually non-profit organizations. It's also like important to mention, they are not here to make like a lot of profits. Vera, I think, is based in Delaware. Gold Standard, I think, is based in Switzerland. And so there are some small costs when you register for them, but they're not for-profit organization. And their goal is really to promote good accounting, good methodologies, and reliability on this market.
Yeah, it's great. Great there, right? For credibility, yeah. And adding legitimacy to this program.
Yeah. So they're a bit, you know, stronger. And so we're saying like there are pros and cons and there are criticism also about this market. So those companies, they're a bit in between two big pressure. One pressure is to do something that is feasible for a farmer, you know, or for someone who wants to develop a project. You cannot put like too hard of requirements, something that is too theoretical, and because then nobody will do it. On the other side, if you do something that is too easy, then the market will not believe it because it's okay, like it's open, it's an open door, like to a lot of abuses. And so they try to bring processes and methodologies that will like balance those two. And so this balance is very hard to achieve, and they're still trying to find this balance. So it's not the case yet. And we'll see, it's still very complicated, it's still very hard. At the same time, still very much criticized, as maybe some of you have seen. That being said, the expectation on this market is it may grow very, very fast and very, very high. So last year, it was according to Citibank. It's a report from really last month. So really like the latest report that I couldn't find on this market, they assessed that the market was about $2 billion. In 2022, and that he could reach $55 billion in 2030. So tomorrow, like in 7 years, it could be multiplied by 25. And this will depend if those Vera and those Gold Standard or the other registry will find the right balance. If they find a balance between creating trust in the market and creating feasibility in the approach for the ones who want to develop the market, then this market will explode and will become a huge market, meaning a huge opportunity for farmers. So that's a bit where we are today. We are at the crossroads of something that could be very exciting also something that could fail. But we at Rivulis, we say, if it explodes and if it really takes off, we want to be there and we want to know this market and to be able to support farmers to leverage it. Let's try to understand a bit more in the market, especially in agriculture. Because what I talked about until now was like the general market of the voluntary carbon credits. The impacts that we want to achieve in an agricultural project usually are around three metrics, two or three. The first one is we want to reduce GHG emission. And this comes back to 22% that I showed at the beginning. Right? We want to reduce the emissions on farm. And so this could be like the CO2 emissions from the equipment or the machinery. For instance, if you adopt like a more like efficient irrigation system with you electrify the pump. So obviously like the compared to like a central pivot that we pump a lot of water at high pressure. Now you use a drip irrigation system in electricity, then the diesel compared to the electricity that you use with a drip irrigation could save CO2. But it's also about saving nitrous oxide from nitrogen fertilizers or saving CH4, for instance, if you're a rice grower and you move from like a flooded paddy to a drip irrigated paddy. This could be like, it seems like a very, very, very much of a detail, but you need to know that rice today pollutes as much as shipping or as the aviation industry. So it's a very big challenge, environmentally speaking, to transition rice growers. The second thing we want to achieve is more soil organic carbon, because as we said, that more carbon in the soil means less in the air. And the third thing, in some projects, not in all, because someone who will grow crops have maybe less opportunities to increase woody biomass, but yeah, it's to increase the woody biomass. So basically to put more trees on the fields. There are a few rules that we need to follow. The methodology I was talking about of Vera is like a 157-page document. So there are many, 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 many rules to follow. But if I have to summarize, what are the four golden rules from this document? One is no double counting. You cannot register a project with Vera and with gold standard. And so there are a lot of mechanisms that try to avoid this. If you have a project, you can only ask for the money once. Pretty normal and pretty straightforward. The second golden rule is the rule of additionality. The project needs to be additional. And this is a bit harder to understand. Because additional doesn't mean that you have an impact, doesn't mean that you reduce your GHG emission or that you improve the soil organic carbon. No, additional means that the project itself as a whole would not have happened without the money of the carbon credits. So it means that you're doing something that is hard to do, that is uncommon, that is less than 20% of the farmers in your area are doing it. I'll give an example. If you put a solar panel and you're in a state where solar panels are like fully subsidized by the state, then you cannot ask also for carbon credits because they will tell you, you already get the money. We won't now give the rights to American Airlines or to Delta Airlines to pollute against this because you would have done it anyway. So there is no additional impact that is created by those carbon credits. So this is the rule of additionality, and it's a big buzzword in the carbon credit market, carbon offset market. The third rule is the permanence. So especially for what we call carbon removals, so the soil organic carbon or woody biomass, there is always the risk, right, that someone does something for 3 years, and then in 3 years, I don't know, the forest burn, or you decide to sell this to a movie theater and to build like a movie theater in the field, and then all the carbon that was sequestered in the soil is back in the air. So here we're looking for farmers that are in for the long term from an agronomic perspective. The rule for Vera is a 30-year commitment. I will not today talk too much about the 30-year commitment, but the overall idea that you have to keep in mind is like, this is here for the long term. This is here to stay. You don't put cover crop because it's an opportunistic move for the next year, but then the year after you will stop doing it and you will do it maybe again in 10 years. No, here the changes that we want to do are changes that are structural changes in the way people farm. And the last thing that is also important in the carbon offset market is the measurement rule. Or the outcome-based rule. Here we don't issue carbon credits because someone claimed that he did a practice. So for that, you cannot claim, I put cover crops, so give me a carbon credit. No, you put cover crop. It's an additional practice because it's not common in your area to use cover crops. So let's go. We know that it will improve the soil organic carbon. So now we'll have to measure soil organic carbon for a long time. And if there is an impact on the soil organic carbon, this impact will be the base or the basis of the carbon credit. So this is outcome based. This is not practice based. Okay. All clear, okay. Richard? Yeah.
Two questions coming in. One and a comment. I just want to say, you know, this seems like but
it is.
We're talking about a lot of money changing hands, and it needs this oversight, I think. So, and we've got a viewer that wants to know, are there any government agencies that are regulating the price of the carbon market, or is this just private entities?
No. Today, there is not even an exchange that regulates this market. So it's an over-the-counter market today. Meaning, like, if tomorrow I issue a carbon credit, I will have to find a buyer for this credit. I would not talk too much about it today because there are a lot of initiatives that are being now driven, especially, for instance, by Temasek, our shareholder, to put together an exchange for this market. So I think the structure of the market and the way those credits will be traded, if the carbon credit market takes off, will change in the next few years. So yes, today it's an over-the-counter market. Tomorrow it might be an exchange market, but I'm not aware of regulated prices.
Okay, great, thank you.
And actually the prices now today, they range for carbon credits from $2 a ton to $500 a ton. So you have a very, very wide range depending on the type of credit or where it was generated, on the how trustful is the project developer. Et cetera. In agriculture, usually what you could expect is around $40, $50 from what I heard, but really don't take me on this one because there's so little credits in agriculture that it's very hard to have a benchmark. Any other question?
That's got it right now. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll continue. So as you say, it's a very complex process, and I'll continue actually with the even more complexity, because these are the rules to develop, like I was saying, like the rule of the methodology, then there are the rule of the process to certify. So here I put what is the process for like a Vera VCS carbon credit, so the most, let's say, common or the largest carbon registry. So first, obviously, you have to design I won't enter into like all the very much to very little details here, but you have obviously to design a project, right? To do something. What is a project? It's like you take a farm and you have to change this farm in a way that will capture carbon or reduce emissions. So first, something needs to change, and so this is the basis of everything here. But once you've done that, you have to enter a very long and complicated process with Vera. You have to write a very long document. It's something like 100-page document that go by the methodology, that describe all the calculation, that collect all the evidences of the numbers that you claim, and that really get into like the very little detail of the project. It's a very hard document to write. Then you have to list this document or this project with the registry, meaning you have to go and to make sure that this is accepted by Vera as a first review. And then you have to bring a third party auditor to validate. It's called validate the process or the project, meaning that they have to check that you worked according to the methodology and that in the field you did what you claimed. And then you have to register, so to validate the validation somehow. And only when you register, the project is kind of like entitled to issue carbon credits. But it doesn't mean that you will get carbon credit at this stage, because to get carbon credits, from what I said before, need measurements. And so the measurement, you will wait to have like a significant impact. And we all know that, for instance, soil organic carbon change over years, not over months. So maybe you will wait for 2, 3, or 4 years to get your first measurement and to do what we call the verification. And the verification is when you measure your impact compared to the baseline that you set up at the very beginning. And this is when you issue carbon credits. And then every few years, you can issue again. And you create this recurring income. All this process is quite expensive because, yes, the Vera is a non-profit organization, but the auditors, they are profit companies, right? So you have to pay them the same way you have to pay PwC when they audit your accounts. You have to pay the auditors. The measurements in the soil, you have to pay for them. So there are a lot of costs. If you externalize when the project document writing, you have to pay for it. So it's quite an expensive project to handle. even before issuing any carbon credits. And so I come back to the very beginning of what I was saying. There are pros and cons to this market. This is currently a big con, right? Because you have to invest a lot of money up front in a project that is quite uncertain, because today not many companies and not many farmers manage to issue carbon credits for farming. And so a bit to summarize it, it's a very new process. The methodology from Vera, the latest methodology was published on May 30, so about 2 months ago, a bit more than 2 months ago, so that you understand how new it is. It's a very long process. You don't issue any carbon credits in the first 18 months, but even like I would say in the first 2 to 3 years, you have to wait to get the first carbon credits. It's a very complex, many stakeholders to manage, very, very far from like the day-to-day of a farmer, a lot of like scientific literature to read and to review, and it's a very costly project, and it's also very uncertain, right? And so it's no surprise that today everyone talks about carbon credits in agriculture, but carbon credits in agriculture is less than 1% of the whole carbon credits worldwide. And so basically what it means that it's a very nice idea on paper today, but it's almost a non-existent idea in practice. And so this is why there's also a lot now of energy that is being put to try to make this happen. Because again, it's very new. So you should not expect that everything is about farming and everything is perfect. It could become in the next few years. But today, as I speak, less than 1% come from agriculture. And so the idea is a bit to say, you have a massive business opportunity that could be ahead of us for farmers. And you know, after all I said and I described this process, it's quite inaccessible for farmers to benefit from it. Okay, so that's kind of like the conclusion that we also reached at Rivulis when we tried to explore this market. Massive business opportunity, a market that could become like a $50 billion market multiplied by 25 in a matter of a few years, and a process that is really far away from being easy to navigate and very costly and uncertain.
Right.
And so this is why, yeah.
If I'm a grower, I just don't, you know, I don't have the time to do 150 pages of applications. And even if I did, I might not want to invest the 100, 150 or whatever it is. So it's a little discouraging.
And the idea is also that no one today is really able to guarantee how many carbon credits, at which price, if you even will get carbon credit, because at the end, it depends on the measurement that you will get. So it's even an uncertain process, right? So you will enter an uncertain process that is very far away from your day-to-day, that is costly. If you're a farmer, don't know it, you will most likely also take like a consultant that will help you, and that will also have a price. And so all in all, let's be honest and clear with ourselves. Today, the market is not accessible for farmers, and this is why no farmers is really entering it, or very like esoteric project or very small project. And this is also why we created Rivulis Climate. The idea that we brought with Rivulis Climate is to say, okay, we Rivulis as a company supported by Temasek, this is the market that interests us because we want to be more sustainable. We want to help the farmers if there is a big business opportunity in the future. So we want to be there next to them, and it can be also a vehicle also for us to do more business with the farmer in the long term. And so the idea is to say, we'll take this risk or this cost or this, like, let's say, time to market, we'll take this on us. We will develop the project in collaboration with some farmers that we would select. So we're looking like to select some farmers that could be good candidates. And then if we think that they are good candidates, we will do the process for them. So we will we'll do the measurements, we will hire the auditors, we'll pay for it, we'll write all the documentation. And if we're successful, and again, I cannot guarantee, and anyone who would guarantee to tomorrow that they can issue carbon credits, I would say, let's take it with a grain of salt. So I don't guarantee success, but I guarantee that we'll take all of that on us. And if we're successful, then we'll share back the carbon credits or the proceeds of the carbon credits with the farmer. And so the idea is a bit to say, we'll bear the cost of the process, we'll best bear the risk of the process. And in exchange, the farmer will have to change the way he farms, right? Because this is the hypothesis, the basic hypothesis of such project. He will have to share data with us, and so to invest a bit of energy and time with us. And he will have some time to time to be available, like so that we can come and to his field and make measurements or to have a few calls with us. But that's all. That's all. All the rest of the process will be on us.
Yeah.
And also it will learn with us, right? Because we're very transparent in this market. We share everything with the farmer. And so the idea is like to do it together.
Yeah. What I love about this too, is that anytime I try to do something the first time, right, there's a learning curve. But now I get the benefit of your experience because you've done this before. So that speeds the process. Plus you learn from doing it and you're able to share that around. This is encouraging.
Richard, you can't imagine. So I've talked maybe to all the companies that developed carbon offset project over the last 2 years. And everyone is talking about the same challenges as I'm living, the same challenges that I'm experiencing, the same like journey or learning journey. And so it is true that if you hop on the train or our train now, you will gain the 2 years of learning that we have acquired until now. And so this is a big shortcut in this to this market.
Yeah, I think it's a huge benefit.
And so that's actually what, so maybe just like in this process, just to make sure, we're not talking only about drip irrigation, right? It's a comprehensive approach to develop the market. So when we look for the right farmers to be like our, let's say, pilot candidates, we look at the comprehensive practices on the farm. But what we just said, like it brings me a bit to my what is our experience now in this market and what we have learned and what we've gathered over the last 2 years. So we started exploring this market, I would say like mid-2021. It was an idea of our CEO. And so we started, the CEO and myself, like to have a few calls and to start to experience that. And so we started like hiring like a few people. And over the last few months, since we completed the acquisition of Jay International Business, so I moved completely on this project, and now I have like a full time team, and we're developing that as a full time team, as a full time initiative for Revolis. So I have a very maybe I'm a bit biased here. I really love my team, and I think I have very talented people in my team. I have like a very experienced agronomist. I have PhD in soil modeling and atmosphere modeling, and I have soil scientists that are in charge to review the literature, the existing literature, and to write the project documents. So it's kind of like a well-rounded team. My background is really business. I'm a McKinsey guy. I worked many years for McKinsey as a consultant. As I said, I have an MBA, but the rest of the team is really science and agronomy oriented. The second thing that we've done in the last 2 years and to start listing project with Vera. So we know we have three listed projects that are in this like very long process that I showed you before, this long arrow, and are going like with a lot of tears and sweat through each of the stations of this project. Three projects could seem small. But keep in mind that in Vera, you have about 60 projects that are globally listed. So we have three out of 60. I can't say that I think we're in the among the organizations that have the most projects in this process. And maybe I don't have all the answers about this process, but I think I know better than many more in this market because we have experienced all of this. All our three projects are now in their validation phase. So we had like a validation audit and we're now working on the comments that we got after the audits to pass and to get to the next phase, which is the registration phase. We so far we've exclusively worked with Vera, so the biggest carbon registry, and their methodology, the agriculture methodology that is called VN0042 for the experts in the crowd. I must say, I think my team knows by heart any comma in this methodology. So this is quite nice. But we're not locked either with this, right? We could, if for instance, if we were to develop a project in the US, we could also explore working with the American Carbon Registry or the Climate Action Reserve Registry. But my team has developed some good capabilities also. So we have like some like proprietary data collection templates and calculation sheet to do like to collect the right data and also to make the right calculation. I must say that each project is quite different. So we are all the time at this stage, we have to tailor this data collection to the type of project that we get. We have the capabilities to write project design documents. No, at the very beginning, Richard, we tried to outsource that. I don't know if I told you that before. We tried to outsource these capabilities with consultants, and the price tag that we got was around like 50 or 60,000 pounds, so maybe $60,000-$70,000 to write this document. So this is when I decided that I would hire someone, and this is where we started to write those documents by ourselves, because it's a very expensive project to do, only to write the documentation. And the last thing that our scientific team is doing is to try to optimize the way we do soil sample. So to take as few soil sample as possible while keeping as high the accuracy as we can. And also to model the change in soil organic carbon using a geochemical model. So this is, for instance, an output that you see here on of our model. That where you see like an experiment that was run around like 150 years, and you see how the model is still like trying to kind of like calibrate, or we're trying to calibrate this model to forecast this experiment. And so this is what our team is our scientific team is working. So we have quite like good progress, very good understanding of the market, of the methodology, and also some good technical capabilities that we've been building over the last 2 years.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. Yeah. We have a question coming in from one of the viewers today again, and they're wondering about the split, how much revenue actually goes to the farmer, how is this determined, what were some of the qualifications on that?
At this stage, we don't have like a standard percentage that we give, because it all depends on the project, but what we do, we usually give the majority, most of the carbon credit. So we take a percentage at less than 50%, and there's usually much less than 50%. What is the influence? What does influence this this percentage? Is first the size of the project. So if we have a project of a few hundred acres, we'll never cover the cost of this. So we usually at least take a higher percentage. So that if we're successful, we'll cover at least part of the cost. But if we're talking about a project in the thousands of acres, then it starts being more interesting for us, because then maybe we'll be able to cover the cost, and then we could like give a higher share. It will also depend on what are the practices that are being implemented, right? It's like the more practices, the more changes in the field, the more potential the project will have. So altogether, what I usually try to do is like to do something that is like fair for like all the parties here. And that gives the majority of the credits for the farmer. Keep in mind that we have now this approach that we're not trying to make a lot of money on this, right? We're trying to kind of like learn to develop the capabilities. So our goal is to find like good collaboration with farmers, so that like everyone is also happy with the outcome.
Yeah, true partnership. It sounds really really good. Yeah. We have another question coming in, Jonathan, and this is about if you know any consulting entities for construction as well. This person is converting agriculture waste to concrete.
So no, I don't know, because this brings us back to the rules of the market. So you have to follow a certain methodology. And so the methodology that I know very well is the agricultural methodology. And it doesn't include a conversion of agricultural waste into cementry. You cannot include that in this specific methodology. That being said, maybe there is a methodology that covers this kind of practices, and this we need to check. So you can also go to the Vera website to look at the different methodologies, or to Gold Standard, to different registries, and maybe you can find a methodology. The last option, if you're really into it and you really want to develop and to leverage this market, is like to develop your own methodology with Vera. But this is quite a long and complicated process, right? So it's a process of 2-3 years to work with scientists at Vera and to show, scientifically speaking, how you will do the accounting of the carbon and why you can include this kind of changes into this methodology. But but personally, I don't know a methodology that can do that.
Right. Those are some great resources you mentioned and some great recommendations. Thank you.
Yeah. So in terms of projects today, so as I said, we have three projects I apologize, Richard made the comment before that I have everything in hectares. So I'll try to convert into acres. So we have three small pilots, two in Italy and one in Israel. between 50 and 100 hectares each. So I would say like between around 200 acres each project. Actually, now in Israel, we added a fifth plantation, so we reached 85 hectares. These are the first pilot that where we started. We started very small because we say, okay, we want just to test, to learn. Now we're at the stage that we're looking for projects that are a bit bigger. So we signed just a few months ago a very large project in Italy where we're working on today. It's 1,300 hectares, so it's about 3,000 acres. And it's open field rotation, so corn, tomatoes, wheat, sunflower, and soy. We're in discussion with several projects in the Iberian Peninsula on orchards, like olive, mostly olive and almond trees. And then we have a couple of projects that we're in discussion on the Americas, almond orchard recycling, new plantation in Mexico in the grazing land, degraded grazing land, some project in Peru and in Argentina. We're also discussing a few more projects I didn't put on this map in Tanzania, 15,000 hectares, or like about 35,000 acres, so quite a big project in cashew nuts. We're talking about some partners in Indonesia around palm oil. So we have a very wide range of projects and a very big global footprint in the pipeline. Not all these projects will go through because at the end of the day, we're very picky, I must say, in the sense that because we invest so much in each of those projects, want to take projects where we think we can have a chance to be successful. So this is like the main part of the selection, is like to find the right and the good projects. All the projects that we do, that we list, they are available on the Vera website. So you can also check by yourself. You can go to the Vera, you can type Vera registry on Google. You will have like a database. All the projects of Vera are listed online. So if you want to learn about it, how it looks, how a project document looks, you can look into that. I would recommend to filter by the methodology of Vera VM0042, which is the agriculture methodology that should be relevant to most of you. And you can also type Privolis and you will see the three projects that are already listed. So this is like the one that we have in Italy, for instance, one example. We do also a lot of such events, so sometimes in person and sometime on Zoom or on Teams. And again, this is we don't necessarily do it only by ourselves. Sometimes we do it also with the dealers or the distributors that work with us on a yearly basis. So we're really open for collaboration here. This is an example of an event that we had in Italy a few months ago with Terre Padane, which is a large cooperative. They have like about 200 million euro of revenues and they buy, they're like our biggest customer in Italy. And so we go together and we promote those projects with farmers. And we have those very open discussion again, like it's not a good solution for everyone. But it can be a good session from some farmers, and if anyone is interested, we're very happy to have more advanced conversation. And so this is, for instance, what happened with one of the farmers after this conference, so the Italian farmer that I was mentioning before that we signed a couple of months ago. So we had like a first farmer of 1,000 hectares, so about 2,600 acres. And so this farmer is like, you see like, committing like to change for 30 years again, like it's a group project. So we already added another farmer because we all know how this works. Like when a farmer does something that's exciting, usually the neighbor wants to do the same. So we go like we play a bit by ear there and we try to also expand there. So we have another farm of 300 hectares. And so just to get a bit into like the details of what is this project about. So you see like at a very high level, the idea is to change the way the farmers irrigate. So from a rain gun to a drip, so a rain gun powered by diesel to a drip powered by an electrical pump. To change the way he fertilize, also to put fertigation with the drip and to reduce the overall amount of synthetic fertilizers and to replace some of the synthetic fertilizer with some compost and organic fertilizer. To reduce the tillage, so it's usually did like he was used to do like a 45 centimeters So I would say around like 20 inches till edge, I would say, if I'm not mistaken. And you will now reduce to 15 centimeters, so around like 6-7 inches. And you will implement multi-species cover crops. So like in the counter season, like you would put cover crops with a mix of different species, with some end-fixing species, for instance, that will also help him in the next season to reduce his nitrogen input in the soil. But here, like a comprehensive change that this farmer is doing, and we're now working on writing the project document and make all the calculations to see how much this this would generate.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jonathan. It's changing a bit of what you're doing. It's not reinventing how to farm. It's making a few changes. These seem very reasonable to me.
It is reasonable, but it's not easy, right? It's a lot of changes at once. And but yeah, we're not also asking for the moon, right? We're trying to be very reasonable, very pragmatic. And on all the projects that we do, so we have an agronomist that that come in the discussion that makes suggestion, but obviously like all the decisions are the decision of the farmer, right? So we don't push any decision. The idea here again is to have a collaboration with the farmer to bring suggestions, to have an open discussion, and whatever he wants to implement, he will do. And whatever he doesn't want to implement, we'll never force or never, again, our role here at the end of the day is to provide the irrigation system. And we want the best irrigation system, high quality, at the best price possible for the farmer. And on top of that, here we propose or we offer him to do like a carbon project. And so this is like to his choice, to his decision. And so this is a bit how we also envision those collaboration.
Yeah.
And so it brings actually, so this is actually like a few, I added a few pictures of, so you can see some of our project. This is like a nice cover crop that that we have in Italy. Then one of the validation visit that we have, this is the you see all the drip irrigation reels that this farmer implemented. This is the avocados that we have in Israel. So see maybe like for us, if we have any avocado growers on the line, it's not a very clean plantation in a sense. So they have a lot of, so they do an intercrop with wheat here to enrich the soil. They have put a lot of compost in the bed. You see here the drip irrigation lines, and they're also leaving all the residues on the ground to decompose and enrich the soil. It's a very nice plantation that we have here and here with trees that I think were about 2 years old at this when I took the picture. All of this brings me to, okay, where do we start? How does this, if you want to do a project, where is the starting point? And so here, the first thing, again, it's like the predicate of any of those projects is like, we need to find a good farm that could be a good candidate. And what is a good candidate? It's a farm that is big enough that will change a number of practices that will have a big enough impact. So the first thing for us is kind of to understand the context, to understand the situation. So how do we get there, right? How do we get to designing a project before we even enter all of this? So usually we have a first discussion. We can have a discussion. We can send like a questionnaire with like some like a world world questionnaire. You don't have to put data. You just have to describe the farm for us to picture what is in this, what is happening in this, or what could happen in this farm. So what is the size? What is the historical land use? We have to. We can only do a project on land that was cropland or grassland for the last 10 years. That we do the destruction of native ecosystems. And then we want to understand what is the baseline, and what would be the project scenario. So the baseline would be what were the practices in the last 3 years, and again we're talking about like the comprehensive practices of the farm. What was done in the farm for the last 3 years, and what will be done now in the future for the next 30 years in this farm, or at least like for the, let's say, for the long term. And so we'll have like a very open conversation of what were the crops, what is the crop rotation, if there is a rotation, what is the energy consumption in this farm. So are you using diesel pump? Are you using electric pumps? What is the source of the energy? Is there anything that will change the machinery, the way you harvest or the way you till? Maybe like you will do less, and then you have like a new way to harvest. And so this new way to harvest will reduce the how many times the tractor will go in the field. And so this could also like reduce the GHG emissions. What is the fertilization and how this could change in the future? What are the tillage practices? Are you doing any cover crops? Do you plan to do any cover crops or intercrops? what is your residue management policy? Do you clean all the field all the time? Will you still do that? Are you willing to incorporate? And there are some more, also some, let's say, more, it's an advanced solution, like that you can also put fungi in the land. So we have these very open discussions just to try to understand, also to get to know each other, right, with the farmer and my team. And if both of us, we think that there is a good option here to proceed. So usually we'll proceed with like a data collection. So more like, let's say, a detailed data collection to understand how much fertilizer are we talking about, how much energy, what exactly are the different crops, if there is a rotation on which area. But we try to like kind of like quantify a bit better after we got this first impression. And so this is for us the way to do two things. One is also to test the ability of the farmer that he can deliver accurate data with evidences, because at the end of the day, even if he does the greatest things in the world and he cannot prove that he has done that to the auditor, then we cannot register the project. So one thing is like to be able to keep good track and have good data available. And the second thing is like to make a first estimate, what, based on literature, based on the first data, what could be the potential of this farm? Is it 1 ton of carbon per hectare? Is it 2 ton or 1 ton of carbon per acre, 2 ton of carbon per acre, 3 ton of carbon per acre, et cetera, et cetera. And based on that, this is where we comes down to go to an agreement. And this comes back to the question, Richard, that we had before, what is the percentage? Once we go to this first estimate, we present the first estimate to the farmer, and we tell him, okay, this is what it could generate. This is what it could cost. Now let's have like a fair agreement on how we split the percentage. And so we are very transparent with that. And we will try to bring something that's very competitive in the market. Usually the other carbon credit developer, they would not have such a competitive approach, because they really want to make money out of it, where we want to invest in this market. That's all. And then we can start. Then we go, you have my email address, you have my LinkedIn, you have my cell phone. I'm waiting for the calls.
Jonathan, great job today. I always learn so much when I speak with you or watch these presentations. You didn't disappoint today. You did a really good job. Thank you. I can tell by all the great questions that you were hitting some good attention from the audience too. So thank you for doing this. And yeah, please, this is a nice offer from Jonathan to reach out to him. I'm available too. Anybody in North America that wants to talk about this, I can help as well. So please let us know if you have a project you'd like to start. And because as you can see, we're anxious to help. And Jonathan's got all the resources. So that's fantastic. So listen, Jonathan, thanks again for joining us today. I want to say thank you to all the viewers. We know, especially right now in the summertime, you've got a lot to do. So the fact that you decided to share some of your time with us today, we really appreciate. Remember, there's over 300 video trainings on the janesusa.com/trainings page. And as always, these are free trainings, also available for Irrigation Association education credits. So you can use them there too. So again, Jonathan, thank you. Everybody, thank you. We're going to be back next week. Connor Cunningham's going to be talking about how to create an irrigation schedule using a soil moisture meter. It's going to be good. Hope to see you all then. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. And thank you, everyone, for joining. Have a good day and a good summer.
All right.